Hi, and welcome to the Diablo podcast, brought to you by purediablo.com, your home for Diablo news, an ever-expansive wiki, and this podcast. And we have a lot to get into today. I am your host, Xanth, and I am joined by Nineball.
Father bless.
You threw me for a loop there. And noted streamer and whale Nerdwords.
Hello.
So it is, well, it's 9:30 my time, 10:30 yours, Nineball, and well, actually, I should say 9:30 ours, Nerdwords. And we have just been spending an hour talking about the release of Diablo 4 coming 6/6/23. And for all of you math fans out there, 2 times 3 is 6, so 6/6/6 with a little bit of work. What are your reactions? You tuned into the Game Awards. You saw some news, and then you got the news that we've all been kind of expecting, but it was still quite a sight. Nerdwords?
That trailer was sick. Sick. Like, Blizzard always kills their cinematics, but holy shit. The first two out of the gate, like the announcement and then this, just absolutely incredible. Being that I'm really excited for the story and how it's going to progress with this game and open up with the world and things. I think that's what's like got me the most hyped is those trailers are just incredible. Just wow. And Anarius. I want to harken back to a couple episodes ago. Those goddamn wings, Nineball. You're right. I felt like that kid again, right? Like that, those wings. Whew. Badass. Yeah.
There's no matter how many times I see them, there is just something that's always awe-inspiring about seeing an angel in a Diablo game. It is just, it's a magical experience, no matter what it is. And Big Daddy Anarius does not disappoint at all. At all.
I do have to say, I felt like these wings were some of the best that I had seen in cinematic form. They felt very vibrant, and then as they moved and then actually interacted, it was phenomenal.
And how it lit the demons too when he lands and the light hits him and they kind of like go back from
Yeah.
it. Like, just, ugh, kudos. Great job. That team is incredible.
So we got the news that we were expecting. We did expect that we were going to find out about Diablo tonight, that we were going to get our release date. Is June okay with you guys? Were you a little heartbroken that it wasn't April?
I mean, there's always, I mean, that's a few months, right? So it's a few months difference, but I think I said it before on previous podcasts. Honestly, take the time you need. Like, the game's
Yeah.
gonna be incredible. Like, they're gonna make sure it's incredible before it comes out. And yeah, if it's June, cool. If it's April, would have been really cool too, you know? I'm not hurt by a few months. I'll live. It'll be okay. I've learned a little bit in my years, and patience is almost one of them, so.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is like one of those ones where it's like, what is a couple months if it's going to be a game that you're playing for, you know, as we've seen on average, 10 years. You know, so it's and also, I mean, in amidst of all of the celebrations and everything like that, it is worth pointing out that there was an article that dropped on the Washington Post today about, you know, some of the ongoing issues over at Blizzard as a developer, and also the issues of crunch and things like that in order to meet deadlines. So if, you know, the rumors that we've been getting over the last couple of months meant that they pushed their own deadlines back a couple of months in order to hopefully try and build a little bit more work-life balance for the developers, all good in my book, definitely.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, the Washington Post article, it dropped early today. It's going to get overshadowed a lot by today's events, but it does highlight, Nineball, you hit on it. It does highlight, some of the problematic things that have kind of gone on in Diablo 4's development, and some course correction that has happened along the way.
No.
And if it does still sound like June might be hard, right? And I think that's with it. I've never released a game, and maybe if we can get Jay back, we can talk about like what happens in a crunch like scenario and how you avoid it. But if us waiting till June makes their lives a little bit easier, I'm all for it, right? I can wait. I've waited how many years? A few more months. That's fine.
Yeah, exactly. Perfectly fine. Just take as much time as you need. And of course, I'm going through and saying this, the official Diablo partner. I'm wearing my, Diablo, basically like priest of the Church of Light
Yeah,
outfit that I'm wearing. And
could you stand up? Give us a spin. Give us a spin on
okay,
that.
I'm
You
not. So I'm
are
not wearing. I'm
wearing
not.
pants, right? I just want to
I
make
am
sure.
wearing pants. I'm not wearing
Okay.
like the full outfit because there's an under robe and I'm already sweating and I've only had the thing on for like 30 minutes. I got my Lilith shirt on and everything. But I mean, it's got like the little tassels with the Church of Light and all that other
That
types of
was
stuff
sick.
there, So I mean, it's definitely one of those ones where I feel as if we have to, as much as I'm excited for the game, as much as I believe in the developers and all of that, I think it's worth it at least to the devs themselves that it is acknowledged the hardships that they go through in order to go through and ship the game, just, whether it be, working conditions, long hours, or what have you. It's kind of like it's something that I've done on my podcast for like a year straight. I always open the show with going through and covering like the latest updates with the ongoing scandals and stuff like that at there. But I'm still a fan of the games because I believe in the developers. Maybe there's a couple of people. There's always going to be more victims than there are victimizers, and so it's worth it. You don't have to give up your favorite game or anything like that, but it's always at least worth acknowledging the darker side of the stories when, especially at times when we're, super hyped about everything, which I still am incredibly excited and I can't wait to get my hands on the game
Oh yeah, I mean
again.
absolutely. And we're going to talk about that too. We're all very hyped, but I think we're also all, human beings who can, recognize that the people who are creating these things that we find joy in, deserve the best treatment, the best conditions, and they are all, really good people, and should be treated as such. I do like getting stories like that. I think video game journalism itself, it has that weird symbiotic relationship with video game advertising, where you don't get a lot of news, right? You get a lot of plugs for things. Where when it comes from like a more reputable source, like the Washington Post, then people feel a little bit more comfortable talking about it. So I think it is good. I think it keeps, hopefully, making things better if a light is continued to shine on issues. But that being said, we're also still hyped, and we want to keep the lights on at Blizzard as well, right? Because we love this game too, and that's the huge conflict within the whole situation. That being said, we do have to keep the lights on.
I'm starting things off on the right tone, I know.
No, and I don't think, like, I don't get paid to be here. Nerdbirds, you don't get paid to be here, and despite your awesome robe, you don't get paid to be here either, Nineball. So it's okay to be critical. Like, that's a part of it. And I imagine during Diablo 4, when it does come out on June 6, we're going to be critical about parts of it. That's okay. I think it's dangerous to just live in a realm where you're not saying those things, right? Because then it's just getting held back, and I don't think there's any point in doing that. So, it's okay to be critical, but it's also okay to be hyped, and it's weird to live in that realm. So, Nerdbirds, please describe how you're dealing with this inner turmoil.
It's really simple. People before profits. They could delay the game till next year and I wouldn't care. We waited 13 years for Diablo 3 from Diablo 2. And we're pushing 10 now. What's a few months if it means that people get to go home to their families and, get a work-life balance, I work myself, and I know what it's like to be asked to work extra and do extra responsibilities and things that, aren't realistic or humanly possible sometimes. So, people before profits, always, even if it's for my favorite game series.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, let's have a beautiful logical transition into begging the company to give us a bunch of robes. So here's the theory. That robe is very sweet.
It is sweet.
And
I'm going to be honest with you, the Church of Light stuff has just got me so psyched.
yeah, so
So psyched.
I'm just saying, if a package with a robe showed up on my doorstep and Nerdwerd's doorstep, we would wear them every episode until we're asked to not to. Okay? Like if you just say like we're done here, take it off, but just we could do it. Timebo.
I just want to make one point. As I mentioned before,
Yeah.
I'm sweating.
We live in Wisconsin. Do you have
Yeah, it's
any
very
idea
cold
how
here.
cold it is? I'm in a hat
No,
tonight. I'm wearing a hat. Legit
no,
hat.
I
Winter
don't know
hat.
how cold that is. I live in Florida. Yeah.
No.
True story.
Damn.
So I think a robe would help get me through the winter, is all I'm saying.
It's true.
Just wear it around.
I have
Okay.
various robes as is, so this would just, add to the robe collection. Yeah.
I own
It's fair.
zero robes. So, see, I feel like, again, Nerdwerds, you went like, oh, I've already got a couple. No, you got to sound desperate. Like, I own
No.
zero robes.
No, that's not how it works. And also too, I need to plug you into the robe game, apparently, Zane. We need to
At
have a conversation because trust me, robes are the move, man.
this point, the podcast has devolved into a strange thing where we're trying to convince other men to wear robes. Hey, that's it is what it is at this point. Okay, so we're not buying robes, but we are buying Diablo 4. We have a few additions out there. What are you swiping your card for, guys?
Okay, so we were just going through and discussing this. I'm obviously late to the party because I'm just coming back from dinner. And so I actually missed the announcement and had to catch up on Twitter and all the other types of stuff. But I was just going through and reading the actual news blog that they went through and put out. And so there is like the standard, the digital deluxe, and the ultimate editions, which are digital. There also is something that we were talking about in the pre-show. There is a separate collector's edition that will go on sale on the 15th that does not include the game.
Just take it. Just take it. There it is.
Yep, that's where I'm at too. Whenever the
Yep.
bigger version that has all the physical stuff, I will probably buy multiples of the digital editions as I get, different accounts and other things like that. I typically have alt accounts and stuff that I'll play on and mess around with, but I have the collector's edition for pretty much every other Blizzard game that I love, and definitely every Diablo game, including some that I was probably too young to own that I went back and searched down on eBay in my youth. So, yeah, I love the physical box things, statues, anything, right? I'm gonna buy
Do you have a
whatever.
collector's edition of Diablo 2?
I don't actually. I just have the PC box. That's all I have is the PC box on that.
Yeah, I mean that's the one that I'm missing myself as well.
That is really,
So,
really hard to find. Now, what's funny is I
yeah.
had it when I was a kid. I got it when I was a kid
Oh, wow.
from the electronics boutique. That I would
EB
like,
Games.
hey, there you go. But I have no idea where the, I mean, I was literally 13, and I definitely didn't get much better with my organization, but it definitely wasn't great when I was 13 years old. You know what I'm saying? So
Yeah.
it's somewhere in probably a landfill, unfortunately. Yeah, it makes me sad. Maybe one day I'll be able to track one down. So
That's an FN chat, folks.
F's in the chat.
Yeah. See, like I want stuff like this.
Yeah.
I need this. Like this is actually mine from my old school Diablo 2.
Yeah.
Like I want that. I need that.
Agreed. 100%.
So again,
So we're
just
all on the
put
same page. We're all
Yeah.
also very old, so
Yeah. Yeah,
we grew
that's
up when
true.
it was only physical editions.
It's a gray show
So
that much. But yeah, no, I mean, it's like, so I guess this is, you know, Nerdwords, who's definitely a lot more like plugged into, like, you know, even though like my Twitter handle is Nightball Gamer, I like play like 3 games a year if it's not a Diablo title, you know, so I really don't play like a lot of games and such. You're definitely more plugged into the culture of the games and everything like that. How this is just kind of like you were saying in the pre-show, this is just normal, like, yeah, Ubisoft, so, and those other ones are doing this.
Sorry, yeah. So basically, like, you know, a lot of the, you know, for a long time, like retail companies, you know, there's been collector's editions for years and years and years and years. They usually come with like a big statue or some sort of like action figure that's really cool. I have a super badass like Wolfenstein, like BJ Blazkowicz, like retro action figure that came with the collector's edition, which is like one of my favorite collectibles ever. So there's always some really cool stuff with it. But the problem is that it's really difficult as a company or an organization to like determine supply and demand for something like that. I mean, typically you have an idea of your fan base and how many you're going to sell, but how many people want to spend $200 on a statue or, you know, that collectible thing? So, you know, typically, just like with most products that exist in the world, you overorder. And so what ends up happening is these collector's editions that are $200, $250 will sit in retail stores for months and months and months and months and months because, you know, people that want it, they're going to get it. People that don't want it are just going to get the regular game and not spend the extra crazy amounts of money. And so typically it'll go clearance, you know, sit on a store and just go at a massive discount later, which just causes a loss for both the retail company and the vendor, like Activision Blizzard, that would sell it to that retail company. But in the last few years, Ubisoft and Activision and a few other companies have really transitioned into making these collector edition bundles, where essentially the statue and all the collectible items that you get in those would be separately bundled at its own price point, and then you would just pair a standard copy of the game with that to create what would be a collector's edition. So it doesn't make doesn't really surprise me that they would go that route, because it makes a lot of sense, and it seems like the industry has been trending in that direction, especially with the evolution of digital in the last decade. It's really been trending in that direction, really probably to save overhead and cost and to avoid, you know, units sitting on shelves and not getting sold. So it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and it's also one of those other ones where you could probably, you know, going through and talking about like corporate profits, you could probably, as a company, you know, you'll make fewer of these at maybe like a higher price point, but put some better goodies in. Because I mean, like the Diablo 4, the one that they previewed, has like a couple of art prints and like some like really like badass like candle holders.
Yeah, know? Right. So like for instance, someone might walk in and not even know what Diablo is, but they might see that and be like, "Yo, that's badass, right? Like I want to buy that." And so it incentivizes people to buy that if they didn't care about the game, but it also incentivizes people that care about the game to go after those things as like an add-on that they might want to, the way you would go after DLC as an add-on for the game too. So, and plus the idea of I could buy the Ultimate Edition to have the copy of the game and then just go buy the physical collector stuff to also have that, that's pretty sick. And probably what I'll actually end up doing, if I'm being honest. Shut up and take my money, Diablo. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to give you more money than the normal box price of a game. Because you deserve it.
Yeah. Because I mean, to actually like get into Zant's question. Zant,
thank you.
would you like to read off the differences on maybe like say like the standard edition?
All right. So what are you getting in the standard edition? So first, you're losing $70, but you're gaining Diablo 4. Open beta early access, a light bearer mount, the Diablo 3 Anarius wings, Anarius Murloc pet, the World of Warcraft Amalgam of Rage mount, which we had seen from data mining, I want to say several months ago. We just didn't know where like it really fit.
Yeah, because that was something that was data mined in WoW back during the Dragonflight Alpha.
Yeah, you do get the Diablo Immortal Underwinged Darkness cosmetic set, and that is it. That is all you're getting in the standard edition.
That's quite a bit of content for just a regular version of the game. That's pretty awesome.
Because if you go through and you look at like the previously, like with Diablo 3, and like Reaper of Souls. You really just got, like, there was a pre-order bonus of, like, I think, what was it, the Tyrael's Wings for the first game, and then,
Tyrael's
like,
Wings.
Imperius's Wings
Tyrael's Wings.
Reaper of Souls. Yeah. Tyrael's wings. Tyrael's wings. Tyrael's wings. All right. Sorry, Rush, for the audio. This one you're getting a lot more for it.
Yeah.
It's like that pre-order bonus.
But what if, hear me out on this, what if you wanted to spend, I don't know, like $20 more? Do you guys want to spend $20 more?
Yes. I don't know.
Well, because,
you know, like for $20 more, they also include a 4-day early access to Diablo 4. So you actually get to play the game prior to what, you know, the actual street date is. And then for the actual in-game things for Diablo 4, you get the Temptation Mount, the Hellborn Carapace Mount Armor, so it's armor for your mount, and then you also get the first seasonal pass, you get the premium unlock included with that digital deluxe edition.
But if I spend $10 more on top of that, I could also add the accelerated season battle pass in lieu of the premium season battle pass, which includes the premium season battle pass, plus 20 tier skips and a cosmetic. I don't know. And Wings of the Creator emotes. And just charge it. We're done. We know what we're getting.
Yeah. Pretty much.
I'm fascinated by what that emote is. I want to see that in action. That sounds cool. I mean, it's exactly. Look, we've talked about it for a while. We are huge Diablo fans. Obviously, have been for most of our adolescent and adult lives. Diablo's always suffered from the monetization issue, and so being that it's a game that has survived mostly off of box sales, you can have as much of my money as you would like, because I know I'm going to get well more than the $200. Even I could spend $500 and still feel like I'm getting a deal with Diablo. I mean, honestly, I've played Diablo 2 since 1999. Played
Diablo. Bobby's eyes are alight right now.
That's fine. Bobby's eyes need to. Well, probably not. I don't know about that. I don't feel great about that. But, you know, hey, as long as it's trickling to the Diablo team in any semblance, form, or fashion, I'm happy, because, guys, I'm super excited. So.
Yeah, and I think there's a nice logical transition to this. We're all excited to give Blizzard money, but there's only one of us who actually knows what they're paying for. and that's Nineball. Nineball, you got to spend a good chunk of time playing Diablo 4 recently. Not, you know, back in 2019, but, you know, back on the weekend. So we'll grill you about it, but, you know, how much did this weekend help confirm your purchase? I mean, you were going to buy probably anyway, but, like, how...
Oh yeah, 100%. Was definitely gonna end up buying it anyways. But yeah, so I was able to take place in a special little beta test. So it commenced last Thursday. It started last Thursday, and we had until like Tuesday night in order to go and play through the very first act of the game. We got to play through you know, the majority of Fractured Peaks. We got to play the prologue in the first act of the actual campaign with story, with the cinematics and all that other types of stuff. And, you know, unlike previous, you know, versions or betas and stuff like that, that people may or may not have participated in, we're allowed to talk about it for the very first time. Though I will add caveats that I am not allowed to discuss direct story spoilers. I can give kind of like generic overviews, but I can't give beat by beat plays, and they want to keep story spoilers at a minimum. Though something that I had put out in my original review that I didn't name, I didn't name Inarius in it, obviously, after today's trailer and a lot of the art that you saw going through and going around with, you know, other people's takes on the game and such like that. Yeah, Inarius is the game, and you get to meet him in Act 1.
So rad.
God.
So, you know, you've gotten hands-on experience with a recent copy, because you've talked about playing it, you know, back in 2019, right? Mm-hmm. How does it feel by comparison to what you played several years ago? Like, is there a noted growth? Does it feel better?
I mean, the demo back in the day was like a curated experience, and so it did have like talent trees, but you really couldn't like gain multiple levels and mess around like with stuff, and so many of the other things were like placeholder, not working or anything. This time you actually like started at level one and progressed your character up. The cap that was in the game was 25. I didn't reach it. I think the highest level character I got was like 21. But it definitely is a much different experience leveling your character, messing around for a couple hours with particular skills before you get like your next level and your next skill point to then progress and then see what that looks like, or just, reset everything, because it has a scaling cost. So like your first couple of levels is actually free. You can respec for nothing. And then like when I was at like level 21, it cost it like maybe like 30 gold per skill point, so like 600 gold to reset the whole tree at that point, which is just like selling a couple pieces of gear that you fell on the ground or that you found on the ground. So but you saw it progressively go up.
This is gonna be like a small question. We're gonna probably go super tangential, but it's gonna be awesome. So when you respec, is it always the same cost, or does it go up? Like if I make a mistake after I respec and I'm like, oh, I got to redo it again, is it going to be the same, or will it go up?
It's the same every time that you reset a skill point within the same level.
Okay,
the
so cost it's all of done
the
by co- level.
Yeah. So the cost of resetting the skills is done based on your character level. So higher your character level, the more expensive it is.
Right, so if you're like level 50 and it costs 1,000, you need to respec multiple times while you're level 50. It'll always cost 1,000 per point.
Yeah, but that's the important thing, that it's per point. It's not like older MMOs and stuff like that where you hit like one reset button and you pay a fixed cost and it just gives you all of your skill points back. You're actually refunding skill point by skill point. You can just right click on it and refund the skill point within the tree itself. So you don't necessarily have to, like, say you want to make a change earlier in the tree. Well, those points, as long as you have met the requirements for everything down the line, because in order to progress further down the skill tree, you have to have a certain number of points allocated to it. So say you have something that requires I have to have, 25 skill points allocated, in order to unlock this. As long as I still have 25 points in the tree, I don't have to refund that one. I can refund a whole bunch of peripheral stuff from earlier to respec those points as I want to. And if that's like a little bit too tedious or anything, there is a nuclear option to just hit one button and it pops up. Here's the cost of refunding everything. Are you sure you want to do that? And then start over from scratch and map out everything.
Okay. What class did you play the most?
So the class that I played the most was the sorceress. The class that I played first was the rogue. So I played the rogue through the story. I played the sorceress through the story, and then I messed around with the sorceress a little bit more after that. I leveled up a barbarian and got through the prologue, but it just was not a lot of time in order to go through and test out everything.
Sure.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, you only could play three classes.
Yes.
So
the druid and the necromancer were not included in the test. And the documentation that we just said, was you could play as the rogue, you could play as the sorcerer, you could play as the barbarian. Druid and necromancer will be available at launch. I have no idea if that speaks to these additions that we were just talking about that you can pre-order and get access into the open beta. I don't know if that open beta is going to be the same thing that I just played, or if it's going to be a different version of the game.
Did it hurt your soul to not play Necromancer?
It hurt me deeply. It really did. So.
It from you for sure.
Playing these inferior classes, but thankfully I didn't have to deal with ticks and fleas.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's good. Well, at least you have to deal with that, but come on.
So do you think Blizzard didn't want the druid in because it was too good?
Too weak?
Good. So it must be a connection issue. Good.
Good. You're like talking about like different things. You're like, that's like icy hot. It's just a conundrum. Like good druid, I don't understand.
An oxymoron. Yeah. I just personally love that the one thing I really want to know is the class mechanic for druid, and here again with an opportunity, nothing.
So Blizzard, as a fan of druids, Blizzard is giving you your favorite thing. Disappointment.
Damn.
Now, Nymal, I'm going to have to ask to see, did you write that down before the show? Are you writing zingers? Are you working on a type five here? Just really bad druid jokes.
I can't even take credit for that one. It's a Metalocalypse joke.
Okay. Well, you repurposed one of the few things
I still remember of that show, but it's like, we got you your favorite thing. Disappointment.
Okay, so you got to play a few classes, begrudgingly, and you got to dig into a little bit of the meat of it. So I was in a beta once, a long time ago, for a little game called Diablo 3, and it also was the early part of the game. We were limited from 1 to 10, and it lasted a year. It was hard to see some of the faults of Diablo 3 in that early beta, right? In playing this beta, does anything come up that you would be concerned of? Or does this, I guess a better question is there enough in this beta to assure you of the future for Diablo 4? Whereas there was so much that was shunted in the Diablo 3 beta that was hard to tell.
So it definitely is a much more in-depth look at the game. You get to experience a lot more, you know, whereas Diablo 3, like, literally was just up to the Skeleton King. This one, you know, it's the full first act. So you get to actually do, you know... the end of act boss, a couple of like little mini stuff, but you do get to experience a lot of what the game has to offer, such as the dungeons and side quests. Excuse me, you get to mess around with the skill tree and such. You don't get the end game content that they previewed, such as the nightmare dungeons. Obviously, you didn't have access to. We didn't have access to the Paragon boards. And how those might go through and work. And something that they've talked about, they started talking about recently is like the Helltide scenarios that can go through and pop up. None of that was activated, so we really didn't get a chance to see what those things, because that's the type of stuff that we're going to be playing the majority of our time in the game. The things that we can extrapolate, though, in the beginning, some, you know, bigger type systems, at least, is like the legendaries. Where you can go through and extract the aspect or the property of the legendary. So say that you had something like that I did, where it increases the damage of your core skills against frozen targets by 100%. I can, if I had gotten that at around level 15, and the actual stats of the gear are starting to be detrimental to me, I can pull that aspect, that 100% damage against frozen enemies, out of the legendary and then imbue it into something else. I could replace another legendary's aspect, or I could upgrade a rare piece into a legendary with that power. It doesn't change any of the stats on the rare, so you keep whatever it is. So you do still want to be a little bit picky. And it's something that I've seen others like go through and talk about and discuss, and it could be a potential avenue for some like trading within the game. You could not trade the aspects. So the legendary properties themselves is things that you yourself have to go out into the world and find. But there is potential that you could go and find really good rares, yellows, as a thing that you could imbue those properties into. As a potential system of trading, because those were freely, you could drop them for friends and things such as that.
It's interesting. So it's kind of like in Diablo 2, like base farming.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's very similar.
A really
yeah.
nice superior ethereal base for, you know, a rune word or something. That's kind of so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, the another caveat on that one is from what we could see, legendaries did have more stats. You know, not necessarily that they had greater stats than yellow, but they had an additional affix over yellows. So you probably are still. You still really are looking for legendaries to then swap out those aspects and stuff like that. But yellow, a really good rolled yellow can be like almost as good, especially like it's something that you can go and you can look at like in Diablo 3. You know, Diablo 3 obviously is a little bit more simpler. So certain pieces of gear, it's like, oh, yeah, you just need crit, main stat, and like vitality and whatever you want for like the fourth affix. You know, type thing. So you could end up with certain gear slots where it's like, you know, that extra affix, there's just nothing good out of it. So it's like, you know, maybe you'll get, you know, something small like an execution chance. But yeah. it really doesn't matter, you know.
Right.
So it's like, but, oh, you'll take a yellow.
It does also set up though the godly role, right? Like the, you know, the trifecta roles in early vanilla D3, or, you know, mm-hmm. the superior eth bases, like I was talking about with Diablo 2. So where you'd get that item and it might not be a legendary, but like if you've got the power or you've got that legendary already and just imbue that rare, that would make it super god tier. That's pretty cool. That's interesting. Okay.
So, you know, we got to at least experiment with that system a little bit. So we could go through and, you know, see how that function, how that work, how that would, you know, have some potential. Obviously we didn't see a large amount of them. I did get one unique, in my playthrough and talking with some other players that they had gotten like a different, unique, that, you know, cause I had gotten something, you know, that everyone should know. I got a mask of Andariel, you know, and okay. So that was, yeah, you know, and that is what you expected it to be. You know, I have a chance, you know, when I'm dealing damage to shoot a poison ova out, you know.
Did it give you minus standard. Fire res?
It did.
No, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's sick.
And the only other unique that I had seen, I think, was a chess piece that increased your resource by 100%. So, you know, obviously the sorceress had mana, the rogue had energy, barbarian had fury, and they all, you know, functioned a little bit differently. So it increased your resource by 100%. So if you had 100 mana, now you have 200 mana. But whenever you took damage, for every 1% of your life that you lost 3 resource instead.
And oh, you so wouldn't it's, actually... mana, it's mana shield.
Yeah, it was a mana shield.
On an
shield.
Item. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so that was like one of those things. And in addition to the beta, we also did have a chance to sit down and talk with the developers in like a couple of group interviews as well. And like one of the things that they had mentioned in that interview is that the legendaries are obviously mostly tied to your classes. There are some generic legendaries that will drop for everybody, but the legendaries for the most part are going to be like class specific. And so, like, you're as a sorceress, you're going to be collecting, you know, sorceress legendaries that are targeted and themed around your skill sets, potential archetypes, and your, you know, particular skills and things of that nature. Where uniques might work with, there might be uniques that work with classes, but a lot of them might be more like generic oriented. And that legendaries themselves, because they're kind of like specific to classes, have like a flat drop rate. So if you pick up a sorceress with legendary boots, it is an equal chance to have any property that can roll on a boot, because legendary properties can actually roll on multiple pieces of gear. So you could find a property on a gloves that will also drop on boots.
Wait a minute. So like that stat you were talking about earlier, I think it was the damage to frozen enemies, right?
Yeah.
Could you put that on multiple pieces?
So they do not stack.
Oh, okay.
So having multiples of that same affix won't do anything.
Not be beneficial. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
But you can put it on different pieces, and some of them, I think it was like the amulet and a lot of affixes, if they could go on the weapon, if they went on an amulet, they usually got like a 50% bonus. So it actually would increase the damage or the damage bonus.
So your primary damage affixes you'd want on your jewelry and your weapon.
or the weapon, because a two-handed weapon generally would give you 100% bonus of the effect.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah, so definitely your weapon. Okay.
Yeah, so there's definitely you can't just find a whole bunch of stuff and then just equip it. There's min-maxing where this is the affix that I want on my amulet, this is the affix that I want on my weapon. And I don't know. Yeah, you still need a calculator. You still have to figure out where you're slotting in all of those pieces, and certain pieces can't go everywhere. Like, I didn't experience it with the stuff that I had found, but I had heard some other discussions. I don't know whether it's true or not, but it could be that, like, this cannot go on a helm, you know, okay. Or this cannot go on.
So there is some limitations. You can't just put it on any piece. Got it. Okay.
Yeah, that could potentially change or update. You know, we haven't. This is just an early look at the game, and we still have, you know, six months.
It sounds like it'll give you a lot of room for flexibility to kind of play with the build and where you put different affixes to get the most out of them. That sounds interesting for sure. Okay.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Going back to the developer interview, they did say that because there is like that flat drop rate, so this boot, whatever can drop as a legendary affix on boots, they all have an equal chance. You won't find like legendary affixes for skills that you do not have access to yet. So like if you're if you're only like level 10, you're not gonna find anything that buffs a blizzard. Besides like generic like frost skills. You're not gonna find things that it's like this gives Blizzard increasing damage for every second that mobs are inside of it or something else like that. But once you reach, like, I think it was around, like, level 15 or something that you can unlock Blizzard, then that legendary affix or any legendary affixes tied to that skill added to the pool, same drop rate across all the year.
That's interesting. So, that begs a lot of questions. It also gives us a little more insight into the drop system.
Yeah,
how drops will be calculated, which will be interesting too.
It's tied to
the level of your skill.
Yeah. It's tied to the level at which you can unlock the skill.
Sure.
So but even
when you unlock it, it's even across all the affixes.
Yeah.
So like that skill won't be rarer or more common than another affix. It's just random.
Correct. And it doesn't really matter too much of what it is that you're playing either. Okay. You could go through and have something, you're specced entirely frost, and you can have gear that buffs, fireball or Hydra.
Sure.
That's like one of the things that you might, so when you unlock, Ice Shield is the same level that you unlock Teleport, so it's going to add those things.
All those affixes to the pool. Got it. Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. Yeah.
There is one additional step to that they did say that obviously there's we didn't get to experience it, but they talked about it. There are multiple world tiers in the early access. We just had normal and veteran, and the veteran, just like as we've come to experience from the Diablo 3 difficulty system, the higher difficulties you get experience bonuses, you get bonus gold, you have increased drop rates for gear and such. And they did say that there's additional world tiers beyond that where additional tiers of gear will drop. So once you go through and you get to the higher levels, you have how we're used to ancients and primals. There is also ancestral. Sacred and ancestral gear, which don't have like additional affixes tied to them. Just by the nature of being like ancestral or sacred, but because they have level requirements in order to get into those difficulties, they'll have access to like, everything under the sun, because you'll have unlocked your entire skill tree by the time that you get access to those things.
So they won't have more affixes, but will the stats be greater?
The stats are greater. That is pretty much the difference. Yeah. The range of the stats increases with those higher difficulties with the ancestral gear, or I guess it is the sacred gear and then the ancestral gear once you get that unlocked. You can find a normal piece that's rolled max in its category and something that's rolled like min in its category for like an ancestral piece, and the normal one is better.
Got it.
There's overlaps in the stat ranges.
I just want to point out the question was... So essentially, you've gotten a better feel for Diablo 4 than what we did in Diablo 3.
Right. Getting into the nitty-gritty there.
I did want to mention one last thing from that interview about items and such, is that there is one additional, not a tier, but a tier of gear that will only unlock in the very highest difficulty of the game, that there will be specific uniques that will only drop at that level of difficulty and are more of a chase drop rate. So those are things that will be much rarer to find, but because it's not maybe specifically tied to that, in order to play this spec or this class, you have to have this item and should just buff how you play. That they were able to make it rarer to achieve kind of like that chase type item. They didn't give any specifics as to what they might be, but they're out there.
So kind of like a TC-87 drop in Diablo 2, right? Like a
Griffin
drop, things like that, where you got to get to those low 85 zones. Okay, that's really cool.
Like a Death's Web or a Tyrael's Might.
Right. Yeah. So, and sorry, went on a tangent there, but really fascinated by the drop system. Like, I think that's very critical to this game, and I was really curious about the how some of that stuff works.
In a way, you have actually answered the question, because you just spoke about one system in the game longer than what I was able to talk about all of the Diablo 4 or Diablo 3 beta. So. Because like the item system of that was, it was blue and yellow. That was it. And maybe the one unique that you could find.
Legendary. There were legendaries in D3.
Legendaries, find the boots. What was it? The mud stompers?
Might have been. The only one I can think of is the belt with a skull. But anyways, it sounds like it's got a little bit more rich depth to build on.
You saw a lot more of the building blocks of the game in this test than you did in the Diablo 3, because you got to go through and unlock a lot of things in the talent tree. You got to play around with respecs, seeing how the different skills would interact. You got to find a large collection of legendaries to mess around with. You got to play around with extracting and imbuing the legendaries. You got to craft items. You got to upgrade gear. You got to upgrade your potion, craft elixirs. You got to experience like the vast majority of what the game had to offer, obviously besides the specific in-game content.
We didn't talk about a pre-show, but I'm curious. Did you get a chance to play with any purchasable cosmetics at all, or?
There was no shop in the beta.
Okay. I was just kind of curious how that would end up working. I guess it's one more thing we get to wonder.
Yeah, I don't know if they'll do that in another version, but we did get to play around with a shop in Diablo Immortal.
Okay.
And anything that we spent was basically refunded back to us as like not a BattleNet balance, but a Diablo Immortal balance. And so any money that you spent in the Diablo Immortal beta, you got back when the game went live, specifically as just money that you could spend only in Diablo Immortal. But you got it back one for one. Everything that you spent was more or less refunded to you to use in the live game.
Yeah, I was just kind of curious if it is going to be just like armor, or if they were going to like branch out and we could maybe see some skill stuff. But if you don't have any info, we don't know.
Got nothing, sadly.
No, that's a bummer. But it does sound significantly better. Who do you think is going to be more pleased by Diablo 4? Your typical... I guess we have three camps, right? You've got your people who've been playing Diablo day one, D1, D2, D3. You have your Diablo 2 diehards. And then you have your, I guess we can go to the third camp. You have your Diablo 3 diehards. Who's going to be pleased the most, do you think, by Diablo 4 from the iteration that you've been playing?
That's a really hard question because it's really got something like for everybody. It was so funny because when I'm going through and I'm playing the game, the combat is really good. Like the combat has weight to it. Your positioning when you're fighting a whole bunch of monsters matters. You can't just like spam, at least at the early levels, you can't just spam cooldowns. You know, because at playing on the veteran difficulty, there are dangers in those early levels and you can die. You know, you can't just mindlessly walk through the game. You know, you do have to put a little bit of consideration where you're playing, which, you know, is like great. It's not like, you know, Diablo 3 where you can just run around. I'm going to go through, get my Siege of the Legendary and then blast through Torment 6. And it's not like Diablo 2 where you're just running through the game without a care in the world. And then all of a sudden there's like, you know, a fire enchanted skeleton archer pack, you know, in the underground passage and you get one shot without even seeing them, you know, cause you just got hit by 20 arrows at once. It actually had the ability to where the game communicates threats to you like really well, but because it has that open communication and it's really showing you there's one of the affixes that will put a pentagram on the ground, and as the pentagram like fills in, it explodes and it will fear you. So it's a big tell that has like a second or two build up. So you can see it. And it's like, oh, I can see that. I can react. I can get out of it, you know, in time or anything like that. But then the mob that's enchanted is a vampire. And so the mob type is ghouls, which is 20 of them all at once that go through and surround you. And then now all of a sudden, oh, I can't move out of it in time. And I get feared for 3 seconds because the crowd control in the game is brutal. The only times that I died was because I got a move blocked or something where I could not get out of crowd control, and I got it would last for like 2-3 seconds at a time, which of course in an ARPG is huge. It lasts forever. And so where it does communicate these things to you in that it gives you the time to react to them instead of like just happening. The payoff and the flip side of it is, of course, oh, this is bad if I lose it, you know.
He's back.
I have to interject for something really good. That one that sounds really cool. Even the pentagrams thing sounds really, really cool. But yeah. I'm going to plead my case. Okay. Fear does not belong in a Diablo game. I am fine with being stunned and frozen, but fear is stupid. In every aspect, especially in a Diablo game, but is my least favorite CC form. All of them suck, but God fear is stupid. Okay.
What if we called it terrify?
That's still stupid.
Really scared.
I'm literally a Nephilim and a Carver Shaman, freaking me out to the point where my character runs in the opposite direction out of my control. Just doesn't make sense on any form, fashion, or level, and didn't exist in Diablo until WoW. So...
What about the heebie-jeebies?
Who says that you're a Nephilim in Diablo 4?
Well, I mean...
I mean,
we yeah. are a person
we,
in Sanctuary.
We know. We're a human being. Yeah, we know. They're all Nephilim, you know.
Maybe my character doesn't know, but I know that, you know. But no, I mean, I get it, right? And it's a gameplay mechanic, and gameplay is what it is. But I've always had a problem with fear in Diablo. Again, in World of Warcraft, I had a problem with it there, too. But more so in Diablo. Because of how powerful our characters are. It felt really weird to be blasting, you know, Greater Rift 145s, and then I get feared. Fuck you! Why am I getting feared?
I like the suspension of disbelief stops at fear.
Yeah.
That's it. I can't. The heebie-jeebies is really where it ends for me.
Breaks my fantasy, okay?
Yeah. But I guess to like go through and get back to the question, to maybe answer your question with an observation without maybe my own experiences, to me the gameplay felt very much akin to Diablo 3, and I love the gameplay and the combat that exists in Diablo 3. It is slower than what Diablo 3's combat is, but it also has a lot more weight to it with the decisions that you make, the cooldowns that you use, as well as the enemies and things that you're going through and fighting. Then going online and looking, and I see other people that played the game and reviewed it and said, this game plays like Diablo 2. You know, so obviously there's something in there that everyone, depending upon what background that you're coming from, can get something out of it or some level of enjoyment. So, I think that the game itself was amazing. Obviously, if you're going to be a new player to Diablo, you've got the normal mode to go and start off in. But yeah, I think even just like going and starting off on like the veteran mode will offer, even if you never die, you at least will be able to appreciate the challenges that you face when you're playing the game, you know, because of kind of like that brutal element of like crowd control, as well as like and it's not like overwhelming where it spams you with crowd control the entire time or anything like that, that like some games like do just to like try and hit you with it. Like it creates scenarios just through the monster types and such. You might be, you know, when you've come across like one of those fearing mobs, you might be fighting skeletons. There's only a couple. It's like, it doesn't matter. But then you fight the vampires or the ghouls or there's 20 running at you, and all of a sudden it means a lot more. Maybe you're fighting Fallen out in the Fractured Peaks where the shamans are now frost element, and so the regular attacks slow you, and so it actually takes more time to get out of the fear element itself because you're spending a lot of that combat chilled. So every single time that you're going into one of those combats, it changes. And this reminds me of like one of my favorite things is that like those elements actually like matter and have depth. Does anybody remember what the actual names of the different types of skeletons are in Diablo 2?
No.
You've got skeletons, you've got the undying, but the highest level skeleton that you can encounter in the game is called Burning Dead. And yes, the only thing that they have is like, Burning Dead is a red skeleton and they got some fire resist, and then that's it. When I was going and playing through the game, I encountered Burning Dead in one of the dungeons. And there is one of the particular elite skeleton types that is an extremely slow moving. So the thing with skeletons is like they're slow, but they have some of the most ranged attackers out of any of the mob families. And they also have the captains, which have shields. So they have a lot more health than what a lot of the other monsters do. But you can outrun them and such, except they've got really long range shooting attacks on themselves by themselves. Not that big of a threat. Their elite, I believe, is called like the corpse grinder. And so it's like that kind of traditional skeleton that we all know and love that slowly drags its axe behind you as it's walking towards you, and then has like the big wind up attack before it goes and slams you in the face, the gigantic axe. It never even gave them pause as I'm playing through the game because they're so slow that I never got hit with it. I'm in this dungeon. They're called the Burning Dead. Okay. Whatever, that doesn't matter. They're just their higher level skeleton or something. Cool, whatever. All of a sudden, I get my face slammed with a whole bunch of flaming cones through a doorway because those corpse grinders now, all of a sudden, because they're the Burning Dead, they attack you from range. And when they slam their axes into the ground, it sends out this plume of fire out at you. And it completely changes how that mob group even interacts.
Yikes.
Wow. And so it's like one of those things where it's like, oh, damn, the actual element that these creatures fight in matters. It's not just a name change in because these are the Fallen in Act 3, so they're blue now. You know, it actually matters, you know, yeah, the different types of things that you encounter.
It sounds like there's a familiarity to them, too, because they're you know, character classes and archetypes from other games. But they also put those like unique twists and stuff too, like with the range. That's crazy. That sounds really cool. And also, so it basically kind of like the corpse grinder is kind of like the skeletons outside of Neelthalak's temple.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, in Diablo 2, they're carrying the swords. In Diablo 3, they've got the gigantic axes. But yeah, they're those, the revenants. Yeah.
I'm all for that. You talked a little bit about combat. You talked about dying from a hardcore perspective. It seems like with the weightiness of it, I might be starting on normal. I don't know if I'm gonna start on veteran.
Well, it all so also depending upon the class that you pick is going to change how you do things. Because when I played through with the rogue, you know, playing through the game, doing various dungeons, which the dungeons all have kind of like a generic boss, like there's always like the same boss at the end of the dungeons, but every dungeon might have like a different type of boss encounter in it, and it changes up how you play. But like I think I encountered like two dungeons where it's like they both end in a werewolf, and like the werewolf's attacks are very similar to each other. You know, so there's is some reuse there, but then like the act boss was very different. And the playthrough experience with the rogue that I was playing, that was mostly like a poison-based like range build versus the sorceress that I was playing with a frost build were very different because of the stagger mechanic. Now, one of the things that they had done for the bosses is that you can't actually crowd control them, but whenever you use a crowd control ability on them, it builds their stagger meter, which will slowly decline over time if you're not constantly using those effects on them. And so I had no form of crowd control whatsoever on the rogue. So I had no interaction with that mechanic when I played through it first. Then when I went and played through the sorceress, it was a much easier time for some of the bosses. Because I could stagger them faster, and when they staggered, like it will like it might clear their mechanics of things that they were going through and doing when you were fighting them, as well as just make them stunned, so you can just sit down there and wail on them without any fear of reprisal or positioning or anything like that. And so it did offer, yeah.
That's similar to Lost Ark. Yeah, that was something that was in Lost Ark as well, I believe. That's an interesting mechanic because it basically becomes DPS phases, kind of, right? You get into their
Yeah.
stagger break, and then you really spend time like just focusing and DPSing.
Yeah. So it is definitely one of those ones where it's like it was it created it cre made the same boss fight very different across those multiple classes.
That's cool. That's pretty cool.
Can live with that. So combat-wise, you brought it up. A couple of things. The question I have around it, well, it's twofold. First is evade, and then second is potions. So how does this evade mechanic work? Did it feel natural? It's something that we've never had in a Diablo game before. Well, I guess
Unless you
kind
played
of
console.
on the console, but like
Yeah.
even playing on console, I never really used it. Like it just, I'm very ingrained with the mouse and keyboard, right? And then
Yeah.
like that's just what I would play when I would play on console. So how does evade feel? And then let's talk about potions. How does evade feel?
So evade was probably one of my least used abilities in the game, just because I keep forgetting that it was there. It took a little while in order to get more in tune with it in order to use it. But it actually has some like customization, because once you reach a certain level, it kind of like unlocks base stats on some of the pieces of gear. And one of those is that your boots always interact with evade in some form. Some of them might say you get a movement boost after using evade. Other ones might give you like an additional charge of evade, so you can evade like twice in a row. Yeah, so there was a bunch of things. And like evade itself isn't like foolproof. It's not iframes. You know, so if there's like a wall of blood going through and coming at you, you can't just hit evade to go through it. Like you have to use evade to like avoid it. If you evade into an attack, you get hit.
Got it.
You know.
Okay.
But yeah, once I got a feel for it, it definitely helped, you know, especially as I was going through and talking about a lot of those crowd control or like ground effects between like the frozen fear and things of that nature in order to try and like you know pop out of them or to evade the aforementioned like blood walls and things of that nature in order to like get positioning around them and such. But it did it you know kind of like playing through on the rogue and kind of forgetting that it was there, and then playing through with the sorceress. Maybe it was just me getting better at the game and actually using the evade that made those sorceress such a easier playthrough. But yeah, it felt natural in the game, you know, as if you like you're going through and you're playing, because like some of those things, especially like the you know, everybody knows like the frozen mob type from Diablo 3, and you know it sits there and starts building up for damage and such. It is a lot faster in Diablo 4. You don't have as much time to react, and so that's one of those ones where it's like maybe I can get out of it without using the evade, because I wanted to cast one more spell, or maybe I'm just gonna hit the evade button and guarantee that I get out of it in time.
And evade doesn't break crowd control, correct?
No.
Okay. I'm just kind of curious about that, if that was like, you know, an emergency oh shit button just in case, but okay. I can.
It's kind of like a pre oh shit button.
Yeah. So if you're being chilled,
with those.
And so like chill is like a percentage debuff on your character, and when it reaches 100, you're frozen. So an enemy that inflicts chill will eventually freeze you if you're not evading it. And so if you're chilled when you evade, you're still chilled afterwards.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Then to answer the second part of your question, potions. Yeah. So that one was a bit more simplistic. There's an alchemist that you can go to, and you can purchase, they're called vials, and you can upgrade your vial. So you start the game with 5 charges of potion vials that have like a very short, like 1 or 2 seconds or something like that cooldown, or maybe a little bit longer than that. But it's a very, very short cooldown where you just hit Q and it uses your potion. It has an instant heal and then a heal over time, you know, that we've come to know and love from Diablo 2. And as you progress through the game, when you reach certain levels, you unlock new tiers that you can upgrade. Because as you go through the world, there's, you know, bushes and ore and stuff like that you can click in order to go and get the crafting materials. There's kind of like little, not so much side quests, but like little side events. Like, think of it like cursed chests or Nephilim trials out in Diablo 3 that you just come across. And so it's like a little event that you take take 30 seconds or a minute in order to complete. And if you like hit the mastery on it, you get a whole bunch of crafting materials. A bunch of side quests will give you crafting materials and such. And those can be used to upgrade, you know, various things like obviously ore, metals and stuff you use for your armor. And then like the herbs and other things you use to upgrade your potions. So that way it just increases the amount that each of those charges will heal for. There is another mechanic in the game, the renown system, that as you do things within the various zones will unlock special bonuses. I didn't mention this before, but it's like, so unlocking, exploring sections of the map, unlocking waypoints, completing strongholds, which are kind of like an enemy stronghold that's out in the wilderness. And then you can complete the event and then like, say, unlock a new town after you've, freed like that particular stronghold and such. So it's a new place for vendors, a waypoint and stuff like that. Doing the side quests, completing dungeons. And then there's also a whole bunch of altars of Lilith that exist throughout the game. And so when you find one of those altars of Lilith, it will give you a little bit of renown and a permanent stat boost that actually unlocks across all of your characters. So there's a couple that I found that's like +8 hit points or +2 dexterity or +2 strength that then when you create a new character has all of those bonuses. And as you unlock more renown from like finding those altars and things like that, it will give you additional bonuses. So the first one was you get gold, you get experience, and you get a skill point. And when you unlock that skill point, it unlocks for everybody. So when I went through and I went back and I played the sorceress, I started level 1 with a free skill point that my rogue did not have. In addition to all of the altars that I unlocked when I was playing through on my rogue. The second one is a potion charge. So then all of my characters from that point on had 6 potions instead of 5. The next one was another skill point, which I did not unlock that level of renown. And the last one was 4 paragon points, which, again, I also did not unlock. But those ones would be like character wide. If that's, you know, similar, we've got 5 zones to go and play through. That could be that you have, you know, like 5 extra potion charges, 10 extra skill points and 20 extra paragon points that you'll unlock by completing a whole bunch of various things throughout the zones. So obviously, you know, I had went through, played the story, and I had only gotten like maybe like halfway through, I think, the third level of renown for the Fractured Peaks. And so I had to keep going and doing more, complete like all of the dungeons and stuff like that in order to get those higher levels. But yeah, those are, and then I to go further also at the Alchemist, there was elixir crafting, so I could turn extra of those crafting materials that I found into temporary buffs. Diablo 3 had elixirs for a very brief period of time in that beta, where you would get like small bonuses, and like the ones that you got, they all seemed to have, I think like one was like you gained 100 armor, a little bit of thorns, and like 3% experience. And then there's another one that I think like increased your damage by like 2% and increased your experience by like 3%. So very, very minor bonuses, you know, but it's like, well, if you just have the extra crafting materials and you're going to be playing for a while, you know, why not
Why not
take
use
like,
them?
yeah, why not use them? And or hey, 3% XP is 3% XP.
Well, and to be honest with you, and I have lots of feelings about all of that. But the big thing is that like, you know, with the Ultimate Edition and the early access and the XP, like I'm already starting to see the meta shake for the hardcore grinders that are gonna level right, you know, getting the Ultimate Edition and stacking up on those crafting materials to keep the elixir going to make sure they've got that XP bonus the whole time and probably playing in a four player group the whole time so they got the XP. So it's
Oh,
interesting.
that is another interesting thing. There is no bonuses for being in a party.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah. So you the range that you would get experience was ginormous.
Okay.
So
So
you
you'd
could
still
have
get
two
XP from
people.
someone killing something else, like
Yeah.
you know,
So
it's just
you could
okay.
be really far apart from one another and killing mobs in different sections and getting the experience for all of that. So
Okay.
you get like the group bonus there. But yeah, there didn't appear to be any buffs or anything like that where you'd get bonus
So they don't
magic
get
find
hard
or
like the enemies don't get more health, do more damage, and don't get more XP that we know of at least right now.
I'm not sure in dungeons. It didn't really seem to affect things much in
In
the
the open
world.
world. Okay,
Yeah.
interesting.
I mean, it might have, and I just didn't. I didn't really
Didn't
notice.
notice. Right,
Yeah, and
sure.
I didn't play in a dungeon.
I just remember that being a pitfall of D3, right? If you remember, like, you know, there was not really a whole lot of bonuses, and then it became to where there was too many bonuses
The
for
bonuses, yeah.
multiplayer. And then it became, if you're not playing a multiplayer, then you're really kind of handicapping yourself.
Yeah.
So potion wise, going back, because it's impossible not to be tangential. Did you ever feel like you needed more? You know, like coming from like Diablo 2, you know, you can go to town, you load up, and I'm not saying that's a good
Well,
potion system,
it's a terrible system. I
you
will admit
could,
to you, that
right?
is the worst.
Right,
So
but you had more control.
it's very similar to Diablo 3, where when you so instead of dropping like health globes, they drop potions, and so you can pick up the little potion on the ground that refills a charge. Obviously, you have the max of five, so if you got a whole bunch of them on the ground. Maybe you should be, you could be a bit more like liberal with how often that you're going through and quaffing a potion to just like pick up the next one and such. And then with bosses, you kind of like see like the health bar is broken up in segments, and so if you hit that segment, it will go through and it will drop a couple of potion charges for you. So you have to you do have to like kind of like be a little bit more careful. And then also as you hit those, it seems to have an effect where like the boss will change like some of their attacks and things like that that they would do as their health decreased. At least not maybe so much for the dungeon ones, but the story bosses definitely they started working differently as you push them lower health and you
So they
started
had
taking out the health
phases, like a
bars.
lot of
Yeah,
MMOs.
they had phases.
Okay.
But and did you ever reach a point where you felt like you were potion starved, or did it feel balanced?
So obviously I did a lot of things wrong on my rogue as you're probably going and piecing together, but yeah, the end of act boss was a lot more difficult for my rogue, and I was starving for potions at the end of it. Also, I'm just bad, so.
When you said poison build, I was like, I bet that was not great at early levels. Typically isn't.
Yeah, it was like one of those ones, like it was doing fine. you know, for a while.
And then it wasn't.
It was fun because it's like I'd drop a poison trap and everything would run back at me. I'd hit caltrops. I'd get teleported back. You know, I'd just pop back. They'd all be slow. The poison trap would explode. They're all immobilized. They all die at once. You know, and so it was great for going through. And then, you know, it's like you, even on like caster or like flighty elites, like literally, like you just run up and then you do it in the opposite order. You hit them with the caltrop so they're slowed, and then put the poison trap under their feet, and then it just goes and explodes for a bunch of damage.
That's cool.
Yeah, that ACT boss didn't really care too much.
Yeah, I can see that being a bit more challenging.
Yeah, as soon as it's like, yeah, your CC doesn't actually work on me, and because it's all cooldown based, the stagger bar resets before it comes back up again. So it's just like, well, okay. All right, yeah. Touche.
Lesson learned. Check.
Yeah.
Well, we've talked a long time, and I feel like we can go even longer. We got to save more even talk for story other shows. Yet. I know, but
the story that I can only give grand overview thoughts on without revealing any story spoilers, even though Blizzard themselves are just like, "Hey, Inarius,
right?
I'm
right.
thankful for it.
I'm so that thankful cinematic. For
it. Yeah, oh, right." Man. Which that cinematic was not in the portion of the game that I played. So that was even a surprise to me. That was amazing. Yeah.
It was amazing.
Oh man.
I need them all. I need all the cinematics, all the story dialogue.
Yeah. It's like, I'm going through and I'm like watching that. I'm thinking of, you know, like Diablo's line from Diablo, from D3, and he's going through, it's like, even in heaven, like the angels shall know fear. And just like not even one of the council, just fucking like Inarius,
just goes through an angel.
It's like I am here, and all of the demons are just like, oh shit, you know. It's like, you know, they all are just quivering with fear, and how even the ground, like when he touched down, the ground like was shaking, you know, at his presence. It's just, oh.
So awesome.
Amazing, so awesome. Fangirl moment for me.
Yep.
We get to have a bunch more of them soon. In June.
Ish.
We're all going to be playing soonish. We do know that the open beta is supposed to happen in the new year, more than likely early new year.
Yep.
And we're gonna get access to it.
No dates yet.
I didn't see a date in any of the materials as far as when it was going to go through and unlock, but there is a developer update live stream on December 15th.
Okay.
Yeah, that will hopefully go through and give more details. What was it? On December 15th at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, join game director Joe Shelley and associate game director Joseph Pipora on the official Diablo Twitch and YouTube channels as they dive into details around Diablo 4's production, the new Codex of Power system, and our first developer update live stream. I never even covered the Codex of Power system, which was available in the beta.
It was available?
It was available, yeah.
All right, so fine. Let's close on the Codex of Power because I just want to talk about Diablo on it.
Yeah, so the Codex of Power was, I mentioned previously, there's the legendary aspects that you can pull out of items and such. They are one-time use. So if you pull it out of an item, it destroys the item, so that goes away. And then you have that aspect of that legendary property, that 100% damage against frozen enemies. You go and you put it into another legendary, you can no longer pull it back out. It's done. If you need to do it again, you have to go out and find that affix an additional time in order to go through and put it on a different piece of gear.
So it's not like the Herodric Cube.
It's not like the Herodric Cube. It is a one-time system, one and done, so you need to be careful of what you're going through and doing it with.
Okay.
There is, as you complete dungeons, it unlocks certain aspects. It didn't look like it was all of the aspects of the game, but there's a large collection of them for all of the classes. And so as I was going and playing, like, I was unlocking aspects for the barbarian, a lot of aspects for the barbarian, mostly aspects for the barbarian. And what those things do is that you can go to the occultist where you can extract those legendary powers and imbue them. Instead of extracting it from an item, you can go into your codex and extract it from there and then just drop it into the item. So it's like a baseline utility that as you complete dungeons, you'll get these. They roll at the minimum value of the ability. So it's definitely, it's one of those ones where it's like, maybe this skill is, integral to this particular spec or play style. You have to have like this legendary property in order to like play it. Well, you just have to go and, go and do Halls of Ascension or the Dead Mines or something like that. And it unlocks that ability for you. It's crap. It's the lowest possible, damage or bonus or whatever that it can be, but at least it will give it to you. So that way you can play spec XYZ that requires that ability. And you can do that as you go. And so all the dungeons appeared to have been set with, because as I rolled multiple characters, it was the same thing in the same dungeon. I don't know if that is indicative of just the beta or how it will be on live, but it is one of those ones where it's like, or I should say it's not necessarily the same thing. It was. I had to unlock it like multiple times across multiple characters, I think. Or was it there? I don't know.
Codex. If it's always giving you the lowest possible value, that means that you can find that on an item outside of the Codex too. So like the Codex is just a way to get the lowest of roll and always have it at use, but then you can find it on an item when you play. Okay.
But you can still find it on an item. And so finding it on an item does not unlock it in the Codex. You have to run the dungeon.
Okay, so basically you have like the Codex that is like Kenai's Cube. Once the power's in there, it's there.
Yeah,
you
can use there.
Just extract them on their own and use them as well too. But the rolls in the cube or from the Codex will always be minimum. So if it's 20 to 60, it's always gonna be 20. But you can go find that God roll to get the 60, which again comes back to what we were talking about earlier, where that God roll, really implies that like you can use it to like. If there's a necessary apex for your build, you can apply it. But if you want the better roll, then go get it.
And one of the other ones where I don't know if this is indicative of just the beta or the whole game, not all of them were in there.
Oh, that was gonna be my next question. So they're not all in the Codex.
They're not every single thing was in the Codex.
So there are powers that are like that are gonna be like powerful enough, but won't be able to be entered and applied all the time.
Yeah, which I mean, it's a great system because it's always something that they can just go through and add in.
Add in the game.
Yeah, so it's like, oh well, this skill ended up being a lot more popular than we thought, and it is really the only way in order to play this spec. So we'll just add it in. Because that was one of the other things that they were adamant about is that internal balance of the individual classes is very important to the developer team, and this is one of those ones where it's 100% from the ground up a live service game, and so. If something is broken and something needs addressing, they're not going to wait till the end of the season in order to fix it, whether it's something to rein something in that was too powerful or to pull something up that got, that got hurt because of like a seasonal bonus or something along those lines.
With the occultist, it's the occultist, right? That you're adding.
Yeah.
Okay. So with that, since it seems like gold is the ideal sink here, was it expensive? You're still early on, but like, was it expensive to do it, or was it something that like you would be doing frequently?
I wasn't paying too much attention to see whether the cost was based on the item level of the gear or my character level, but it increased over time.
Okay.
Doing it at level 15 was a lot cheaper than doing it when I was like level
21. So it scales. Okay.
It scales in some shape or form.
And I guess like there's a tangential question there of like, it seems like there's a lot of weight being placed on gold, right?
Yeah.
Until we figure out what the Stone of Jordan actually happens to be in this game. If there is one,
but there's tons of uses. But the funny thing is that the one thing that gold can't be used for in the game is gambling.
Give it time. Give it time. Because those are the
oboes.
Oboes. Okay. Yeah. So
Did you kind say of like oboes? The
I said oboes, not
oboes.
Oboes. Like the instrument? Like the wind instrument?
Like it was like O U B O S.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, so it's kind of like the like blood charts then?
Kind of. You those like those little curse chess events that I was mentioning earlier, they reward you that currency to use for gambling.
So to go back to my initial question, does it feel like there's enough that you were struggling for gold? Like that you were spending it like, oh, I really need to farm to get gold or anything like that? Or was it plentiful enough for your needs?
Yeah, at that point in the game, it was definitely the bigger thing holding me back was the crafting materials themselves and not the gold.
Okay. It was probably good. You know, and granted, it's still early. You know, like 25 is, you know, only a quarter of the levels that you can ultimately reach.
Yeah, and like I said, I didn't even notice when it actually started charging me for the skill refunds. You know, because it starts as free, and then eventually it starts charging you like a little bit. So it's definitely not like every level it goes up by 10 gold. It seems to be is probably going to be like exponential.
Okay, so we're going super long, and I think
sorry, Rush.
Yeah, well, it'll be fine. It'll be fine because honestly, there's a lot to talk about tonight. Any last thoughts?
I keep remembering things too. Which is...
Well, the beauty is we get to talk again and you know we're gonna go into a little bit of a dry spell, right? So you could just keep us satiated.
Yeah.
That's okay. We've been talking with each other for long enough that when you finish each other's sentences on a podcast,
it's kind of cute.
It really was.
Also satiated Lilith, you know, all the blood stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff there. All right, so last Kill thoughts.
Mommy? Sorry. Mommy? Sorry.
Last thoughts on the night of the release date reveal. What do you got, Nerdbirds?
I mean, it was awesome. The performance before the actual trailer was really cool, really sick, really interesting. The actual trailer was just insane. You know, I have people that I'm friends with, that I work with, you know, that have interacted with me, just be like, oh, did you see the Diablo 4 stuff? They like are not, you know, a big part of the Diablo community or have really played the game a lot, but they even were like, whoa, this is like really cool. What is this game? Great job from the PR department and the Diablo 4 team. They're just like doing a great job at building the tension and giving us really good release with this. Obviously there's so much more that we want, and that's still very palpable, but really, really cool. Great place to do it. The Game Awards are awesome, you know. It's always fun to check out all the new stuff coming out, and really, like, I know I'm a Diablo fan, but I feel like it was the biggest announcement at the whole night. I really feel like it overshadowed a lot. There were some cool announcements, but Diablo 4 definitely took it for me. And again, as far as presentation goes, it was so freaking cool. Super awesome. And that trailer, them wings. Chocolatey.
Anarius's wings. Anarius's wings.
Nymal, thoughts?
I mean, like I said, I missed it, you know, so I came in afterwards. I haven't seen the musical performance that everybody was going through. You're not the only one that's like was ranting and raving about how awesome it was, so I've got to go back and like catch Very that. Cool. But yeah, like, you know, because of all the rumors and stuff like that, I was expecting the release date. I wasn't expecting that, you know. Yeah. that was just beautiful, absolutely wonderful. You know, as we were going through and getting the stream set up, I finally went and just bought the Ultimate Edition through BattleNet, since apparently, like, the collectors is a separate thing that you have to get now. So I'll be looking forward to that next week, to go through and try and rush and grab one of those. I'm ready. I think I'm ready.
Our bodies are ready.
I think you look the part there, Nineball. So we close as we always do with a moo, moo, moo.
Moo, 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 moo.
Hail Lilith.
Me.
Send us robes.